If you were coming to Nigeria for the first time and you said you wanted to experience Nigerian cuisine in Lagos, you would probably be lost. People would naturally say, go to the street, the bookers and stuff, yeah. But you'd be scared.
For 9 years, Lost in Lagos has documented how culture lives in this city through fashion, art, music, design, food, and through hospitality. Restaurants, cafes, kitchens, they're not just places we eat. They're where Lagos gathers, where deals are made, where relationships are built, where identity is performed. But beneath the surface of taste and ambiance lies something much bigger, a system that allows hospitality to exist at all. Today, we want to talk about Nigerian cuisine, but also about the hospitality ecosystem that carries it.
We celebrate chefs, we celebrate restaurants, we celebrate Dirty December. But something we don't often interrogate is the machinery underneath all of it. The supply chains, the policy gaps, the labor laws, the investment circles. So the real question becomes, are we actively, intentionally building a robust hospitality industry in Nigeria, or are we improvising? Our guest today is Chef Gibbs, a seasoned chef, a renowned culture tastemaker, and he's the CEO of the African Concierge Network, winner of the Kitchen Nigeria Season 2, and also the driving force of the Nigerian Food Summit, a platform dedicated to the evolution and progress of the Nigerian food industry. Chef, from where you stand in both the kitchen and the rooms where decisions are made, do you think we're intentionally building a robust hospitality industry in Nigeria, or we're improvising one?
I think that's a very good question. I would first of all like to sort of celebrate the work that exists today. Lost in Lagos, for example, is very instrumental to the hospitality industry that we have and celebrates today. I hear you when you use that word improvising, but Janas probably knows this. I'm also trained in theater arts, right? And in music, for example, improvisation isn't just chaos. It's also structured. So you get sheet music and they guide you on where you can improvise. So borrowing from that concept into the hospitality space, I can say that, yes, there's a bit of improvisation happening, but it's structured, right? Where we have people that have foundational knowledge trying to navigate a space or a system that is almost non-existent. So what do I mean by a system that's almost non-existent? We sometimes compare ourselves to a lot of the developed societies across the world. People that have had years to make mistakes, come back, work with government. Like I was in a room one time where it was a conference, and the government were talking about how they do regulations, how they do assessments across facilities. But they didn't start by doing that. It started by those facilities existing and becoming popular, becoming very big, that they saw the need to do that. And for us in Nigeria, we're getting there, right? We're finding our feet, if you want to put it that way. We remember when being a chef, for example, became popular. That was sort of what started the culinary value chain. Now, we're celebrating food photographers and food videographers, not people that are doing lifestyle and food, people that are focused solely on food. We're celebrating food stylists. We're recognizing writers, food writers, Lost in Lagos. We're celebrating people in the media, people in supporting roles. For me, for example, I branched from just cooking in the kitchen to business development. So I do a lot of the work that I do is food business development, food innovation. And we have people that have also studied food styling. So styling and engineering, not plating. So we have all these roles that exist. But guess what? A lot of these people are individuals. And so where you have individuals, it's almost difficult. It's easy rather to think that there's no structure. So maybe a lot of more people occupy those spaces, roles, most of spaces. And then you start to have questions around, okay, how can we regulate? How can we standardize and things like that? Yes.
So intentionality is there.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
I think you're so right. I think you can't just jump into structure. I think structure has to be built from a foundation. And that foundation is basically something that is like done more casually and then more formally.
You know, one of the things that we're fighting for now in this generation is how, if we look at today, 2026, and sort of date back to 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you see that a lot of the foundational work are being done. A lot of the things that would form what the future of the industry is being done now. So yes, I won't be too hard on a lot of people because I see the heart. I see them trying to do the work. For example, I did a thing with the federal government and I was almost upset because before they recognized that space, it took a while. We see how they recognize entertainment, fashion, the movie industry. Nollywood has a name. Like, these are big spaces. But guess what? Food is older than everybody. Because cuisine has been existent from day one. We talk about in school, they teach us the cavemen, how they lit fire to cook meat. That's food.
It's about survival.
Exactly.
But what we've done is taken food for survival and made it food for enjoyment.
Yes.
For,
food that's translated across. It's passion. Now culture, it's, passion, enjoyment, like tradition. Food is medicinal.
Yeah. Culture.
Food in marriage ceremonies, you use ingredients to convey messages.
Right.
So there's a lot more that food has to offer. And the only issue has just been that we've not had enough of these conversations with the right people.
Right. And I mean, I've lived in Nigeria for 18 years. When I first came, the hospitality industry in the way it is today did not exist then. And if it did, it was even less formal than what we might consider today. Like, some people might look at the industry and think it's not quite there yet. But things don't happen overnight. They need time. And I think the downfall of social media means that we want everything done quickly. It has to be perfect because we need to capture it. We need to, you know, show the world it. But what they don't understand is that you need that progression. You need to understand the mistakes so that you learn from it and build on it. And just because it exists internationally, it doesn't mean we can pick up exactly where it was left off. Culturally, Nigerian cuisine is different. It evolved differently. Mm-hmm. The ingredients are different. The way it's presented is different. The way it's enjoyed is different. So in a way, our hospitality industry in Nigeria is going to be different. However, we have a lot of international cuisine that's represented in Nigeria. So there is a certain expectation from them or the restaurant industry in general.
If I can add to what you said, I know I was going to say, we don't need to copy anybody.
No.
So I know what has happened. It's not our fault. You know, when we talk about colonialism, for example, it's not our fault, really. Yeah. Sometimes a lot of these things are subconscious. You just see something you like. It looks very attractive. It looks very, very, very appealing.
It's aspirational,
and you
right?
just want yeah. you want to you're ambitious. You want
get
to be
there.
That exactly.
Yeah.
So even with culinary school, for example, French cuisine, classic cuisine, haute cuisine.
This cordon bleu.
These are all strong foundational cuisines that anyone that claims to be a chef should be versed in any of these cuisines. But guess what? It's not supposed to end there.
No,
you're supposed to take this knowledge as foundation. If you're building a property, a building, there is foundation. Foundation doesn't make the entirety of the building. There are many
but
layers.
You need that foundation for it to secure the building.
What happened with us in Nigeria is we took that foundation and just made it everything.
And that became normalized.
And it's now that we're now starting to sort of find our way back.
Yeah.
You know, I think I gave you that feedback when you did Onje Agbaye. Like, I was so excited because it was almost like for the first time, someone is recognizing our cuisine locally. You know, there's the wave now with Chizuru having a Michelin star, for example. And for me, I'm happy about that. But I'm there's mixed feelings for me because I'm like, this should have started with us in Nigeria.
Not
abroad. So everyone else should have said, because it's happening in Nigeria, they want to do that, right? And it's slowly happening, like we said, it's happening. But I just wish that people would jump on it quickly. For example, for the longest time, I kept saying that I wish that Nigerian restaurants would put African salad on their menu. That's abacha. So for the sake of being Nigerian, let's call it abacha, right? It's abacha. And in my mind, I'm like, that's a tall order, Gibbs. Abacha is very local. How do you want to... guess what? Chizuru did an Abacha dish. And when she plated, when she did it, I was just like, this is what we're talking about. Yeah. She did a new Uyayak ice cream. Eros has a new Uyayak ice cream on his menu as well. So this is what we're talking about. We're not saying that we want to eradicate or cancel years of culture. No, we're saying we're adding so much passion and intentionality to Nigerian cuisine that every single person, why would KFC come into Nigeria and feel the need to add jollof rice to their menu? Mm. Or why are they going to Asia and adding cultural dishes to their menu? Because they understand that they're coming to a space that dominantly serves these dishes. And if they don't serve these dishes, they won't thrive. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing with our international partners within the restaurant space in Nigeria as well. If the locals promote certain cuisines, these wonderful international partner restaurants, global dining restaurant spaces would adopt some of these dishes as well.
I agree.
And even if they don't adopt them, that's okay too.
I
think for me, I've always looked at in restaurants that are supposed to be authentic to a particular cuisine.
Yes.
And then they try to make it to that local environment. So adding like jollof rice or making a carbonara with like suya.
Fair.
This is what it also, for me, it dilutes the authenticity of a cuisine. Because if I'm going to an Italian restaurant and I'm really looking forward to a carbonara and then they've adapted it, I'm going to be disappointed because I really wanted to experience that original dish. But I understand the evolution.
I agree with
too.
You. If I could clarify, I absolutely agree with you. For me, the reason why I say that is because in Lagos, for example, if you were coming to, I'm happy that you've lived with us for that long, but if you were coming to Nigeria for the first time and you said you wanted to experience Nigerian cuisine in Lagos, you would probably be lost.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't know where to go to. People will naturally say, go to the street, the bookers and stuff. Yeah. But you'd be scared, right? So you want to go into a casual dining establishment that's able to serve those dishes. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of those places. And that's where my first instinct went to that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that we can have a society where we have predominantly Nigerian spaces and then we have global
restaurants.
That serve authentic global meals. And you can say,
and not the other way around.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. And I think there needs to be that distinction.
Yes.
So it's not that there's no space for global cuisine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No,
but
absolutely.
But it's also up to these restaurateurs in the Nigerian space to be going out there and establishing these restaurants more. Mm-hmm. Like there, I think the international players have really taken the first step. And 18 years ago, they dominated the industry. But again, they dominated in a very casual hobby form. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, there was no formal hospitality industry. Now that's changed. And you can see a huge difference between, you know, where we were 18 years ago and today.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still seeing a slow adoption by Nigerian restaurateurs to formalize the Nigerian restaurant industry for the Nigerian cuisine.
Yes.
And I think that's where there needs to be more push. So I guess the question there would be, why hasn't there been more Nigerian restaurateurs? Is it funding? Is it lack of confidence? Is it what do you think it is that's holding
people
back?
It's many things, but one thing that I will start by saying is conversion.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's something that Nigerians like to say, that we're well traveled, we're exposed, and if you're exposed and well traveled, why would I want to eat amala for 40,000? Right. and that happened with the popular amala place in VIA. And I don't think it's 40,000, by the way. But yeah, you get what I mean. So a lot of people built so much familiarity around our cuisine, right? And so translating it to contemporary cuisine now has become an issue. But guess what? It's the same thing that happens across the world.
Yeah.
There's usually that period in time where talented people emerge and try to do great things with staples, and then sometimes it's too early for the time, or it's confusing, and then the people sort of resist it a bit, but over time they with consistency they try their best and they eventually get it. So I think that for us, conversion is one thing, because if you're running a business, you want people to eat, right? Mm-hmm. You want people to buy in. So, and if nobody's buying your food, then you lose money, right? So I think that's one of the first things. So there's that fear that Nigerians will not buy these meals in such spaces at that, because to do meals in such spaces means that it will cost
for sure
more.
I mean, the cost of running a restaurant here is
very expensive. Exactly. So that's one factor. But I think that kudos to those that have been able to crack it, mm-hmm. right? Because when you start to do it, people start to, so for example, when the Amala became very popular, everyone argues today, for example, now that to get good Amala, go there, right? But far back as 20, 30 years ago, you probably have never imagined that there will ever be a time that anyone will prefer a casual dining Amala to a Buka Amala.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
But that's what the process that we're talking about, that's the growth that we're talking about, right? Now, beyond staples, there's now something like what Eros is doing, for example, with contemporary cuisine, where it's taking ingredients and doing amazing things with it. Like you have in their Cocos, in the Koi London, in Chizuru, and all that. We want more of those people in Nigeria as well. Yeah. We're slowly happening.
Yeah, even Ona Lagos.
Ona, exactly. Yeah, she does amazing things with her beverages, for example.
Yes.
And then we have all the chef tables.
Exactly. Like, yes,
so they are not probably able to build a restaurant right now, but they've dedicated their time
Chef Elegbede, he's like, I think he kind of pushed it, right? But there's still like maybe a handful.
Yes. So for example, now Atije does her dining experiences seasonally, right? So she maybe once a month, and she's open to customized setups where you can book any time of the week. But she doesn't do it every day, and I understand that.
Yes.
If she opened that every day, maybe for now she's probably not going to be able to get that market that would believe in what she's doing yet, right? But I know that a time is coming where Atije will be a restaurant, right? And people would walk in every day to eat what she's making.
100%, yeah.
For me, this is eye-opening. I think it represents our listeners and viewers that from the outside, when we look into the industry, we don't know a lot of these nuances like around all of these things. So I'm just really listening in and just enjoying like the conversation, I guess. But I was going to ask, you mentioned a lot of I'll say structural issues, you know, like preventing scaling Nigerian cuisine like globally. So what would you say is the biggest, the single biggest structural factor that's preventing Nigerian like cuisine from reaching its full global potential?
That's a big question. I think that I would speak to the concept of industry. And, you know, when we did the NFS the first year, we called it an emerging industry, not because the industry existed in the year we did the NFS, no, but because we started to notice how more people were collaborating more, paying attention more, doing more things together more, new roles started to emerge, new people started to identify in different job descriptions across the value chain. And we just felt like it was time to come together as a group to have a forum. And the potential of such forums is that people can share ideas. There can be coalitions to push concepts, to push agendas, right? So you talk about scaling cuisine, for example. It's in those kind of spaces that those kind of things can happen. Now, it doesn't mean that individuals are not doing it, right? For example, one of my earliest stories of Michael Elegbede was when he went to do something with the United Nations several years ago. And he shared that picture on Instagram where he was turning Amala, and then some of the Caucasian chefs there as well were learning how to turn them. This was several years ago. There's the story of Ozo with Chop Chop, who has documented Nigerian cuisine in a book. There's Eros, who has toured America, teaching people how to make jollof rice, unifying jollof rice. There's Fregs, who's doing the London chef's table all the time. And I'm speaking to people that lived in Nigeria that have gone out, right?
They're exporting.
Yeah, exactly. So these are individuals, right? And they have their role to play. But guess what? There's also the role of the collective. Because when we are able to come together, whether it's once a year, whether it's frequently, and we're able to sort of celebrate the work that we do as a collective, have similar voices, you will see that we would gain more momentum, right? So, for example, content creators play a huge role in this, for example. And in this explanation I'm trying to give about individualism. Content creators, for example, are on in their own world, right? They create their content. It blows up on Instagram. They really don't need anybody to come and start controlling them and regulating and stuff like that. So what I do, because there's sometimes that I see some contents that I feel like wrong. What I've done is not necessarily to go on Instagram to bash them. I make friends with some of these people and we start to have conversation. And guess what? They appreciate that. And they're now able to come into the fold. And as they come into the fold, they're having more conversations. They're seeing they need to do more research about certain things. And that changes the content that they put out. Industry.
Yeah. And you know, there is so much that goes into that ecosystem. You know, we don't give enough credit, accolades to these like influencers, because they are the ones that are shaping the narrative, whether be it right or wrong. It is then up to people like you to have those conversations with them so that they are making sure that the narrative is correct. Exactly. Now, when we were doing the Kitchen Nigeria, and by the way, if you've not watched it, it's season two, especially when Chef Gibbs was on there. We had a purpose behind it. We wanted to show aspiring restaurateurs that becoming or owning a business isn't just about being a good chef, isn't just about knowing what to do in the kitchen. It's about creating the right space, the ambiance, creating the right environment. So the service, there's a lot that goes into actually building a business and food, it plays one part in it. It doesn't define it. But today, when you go into a restaurant and you open the menu and you're like, oh my God, how much are they charging? It's almost like an insult. It's like, are you trying? You think I'm like stupid? You don't know how, I don't know how much this thing costs. You know, if I go to the supermarket, I can buy a pack. You know, there's a whole like story behind, you know, the why is it so expensive? But there is a story behind why it's so expensive. I mean, yes, of course, some restaurants are more expensive than others, but to run a restaurant here is extremely expensive. And when you think about why can't we expand, why can't the industry grow faster? It's because we have things like high rent, we have diesel and taxes.
Power.
And what is being done to mitigate some of these costs to make it easier or more attractive for people who don't have a huge, you know, backing
capital to
actually start up a restaurant? Because there are a lot of talented chefs out there who I've seen be able to kind of really create that experience, but they also need to make it sustainable. How are they going to run a business? What would you say, what advice would you give to someone who is really aspiring to enter that?
I think this is a very good question, right? And there are many layers to answering this, because there's the role of government, there's the role of private sector, there's the role of financial sector in answering all these questions. So, for example, I'm director of events and partnerships for the RCBC, right? RCBC is Restaurant, Cafe, Bars, Club Association of Nigeria. And one of the earlier things that we did was have meetings with financial institutions, microfinance, traditional banks. We've had with a lot of them. And a lot of them, for the first time, sort of started to tell us some of the programs that they have for the food sector, loans, buffers, things to sort of ease cost of operations. And we have to understand that for a lot of these people, they have objectives, bottom-line objectives, right? It's not sentimental, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like in maybe some settings where you have a dream and there's someone to fund your dream.
Mm-hmm.
That might not be
the
case here in Nigeria. So what do you do as a young person who wants to probably start a business? I think you start small. So, for example, thankfully in Nigeria, the cloud kitchens are very popular, right? And so what will it take for you to open a cloud kitchen, start somewhere and scale? That's something you want to think about as well. Right. But anyone that probably runs a business, a restaurant business, and is worried about all the many things, some things are beyond your control, some things are within your control. So for taxes, for example, these are conversations that we're already having with government, right? Mm-hmm. To see how certain things and the tax laws, for example, that was introduced this year, sort of,
yeah,
it wasn't that exactly. Yeah. So there's also cost of production. So another thing that we're doing, for example, is also working directly with the agricultural sector to see how, because that's where a lot of the issues are.
Right.
Where
supply chain.
Supply chain. Before things get to Lagos, they've tripled in value, in costs, yeah. Right? Inflation has just taken over. And it's not even just a dollar situation. It's something as basic as logistics.
Mm-hmm.
So you send tomatoes from whether it's the north or from wherever you send it from, and before you get to Lagos, half of the shipment is gone. Yeah. And so the marketers have to still cover that cost.
Right.
And so they will sell it covering more. All that damage. So you as a consumer, you're probably paying for that damage as well.
Exactly.
So one of the things that we did this year, we went to Zaria, we went to Jos, and Jos is the largest growers for strawberries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so same issue with, like I said, with tomatoes. Strawberries go bad before they get to a lot of the batches. So now they have options for freezing. They have cold trucks now that is able to transport some of these things to Lagos, to Lagos. But yeah, so things are happening. So obviously you want to be part of a group, you want to be part of an association, you want to put your ears to the ground to know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But cost of production is definitely one of the things that make a lot of all these pricings very high. So that's been worked on.
So I think that if this was a different industry, the case might be different. For example, if it was tech, or like you gave an example with the film industry, like Nollywood or even music. Do you think that across the value chain in the hospitality industry, there's respect for the roles and jobs that come up? For example, if I was a food photographer and I'm saying, I need funding for certain things, do you think that there's respect in like these jobs in the value? Do you think it's a respected industry overall, hospitality in Nigeria?
So the context that you give now, I don't think it's more of a respect thing. It's more of a conversion thing. If I give you 10 million to run a business, can you convince me that 10 million will yield, whether it's a space of a year, 2 years, or whatever? So one of the meetings, like I said, we've spoken to a few financial institutions, and one of the meetings that we had, the bank outrightly said that a lot of people that come to them don't even have financial structures. They're not able to prove certain things. They don't have records. They don't have, their accounting is very bad. And that's something that's very common with small businesses, right? You start up a business, you don't hire an accountant, maybe because you think it's too expensive to hire one. So, but what can you do with keeping your own records so that the day of audit, whenever it comes, you're able to still provide the information that you can provide?
Yeah.
So it's not just about funding the dream. Yes, I agree with you. There's a lot of bad branding that has been attached to the industry for a long time. And that's why a lot of the time, the only people that are able to get these funds are actually not passionate practitioners. There are more business people that want to branch into the space, right? But that is changing. And it's and that's why I always say to people that it's not just you don't just come out and say you are passionate about something. What training have you put in place to ensure that you are marketable, that you are someone that, or rather bankable? Yes, that's the word. What training have you put in place? And we're not saying go and get an accounting degree or an MBA or something. That's not what we're saying. But knowledge of running a business is very important.
Yeah. I mean, we go to restaurants abroad and we go and sit and think, wow, this is really expensive. But when we come to Nigeria, it's like, we don't expect it to be so expensive. But in fact, running a business here is actually higher. The cost of running a business is higher. And I think that a lot of
consumers don't even know. They don't know what goes into running a business. And
most of the ingredients are imported.
Yeah. And you know, there was even a time where, if you remember social media, where people were snapping their receipts and saying that, why are we paying consumption tax? Yeah. Without realizing that that actually goes to the government.
Yeah, exactly.
Forget anyone that probably keeps it and evades taxes. That's not our business.
Right.
We're saying that officially.
The restaurants are collecting on behalf of the government. It's not the restaurant feels like adding a tax.
Some people don't know that. And for a lot of people, they don't care. Yeah. Right? All they want is, I ate this piece of food. This is what I think the price should be. Why is it this? So I don't know. Exactly. I don't know whether it's a case of maybe we need to do more sensitization.
I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's people have a lower expectation of the industry. And I think it goes back to what Elvis was saying, is there respect? I don't think there is by the public. I don't think there's that respect because for so many years, people have said, well, you know, I mean, from service and from food quality and from ambiance, there's always been a minimal effort. I mean, it's changed now, but I think the perception hasn't quite caught up with the industry because a lot more effort has been put in training, quality control. All of that is now very serious, whereas years ago it wasn't. So, but the perception hasn't change. So people's perception is, well, what do you expect? It's Nigeria. I think that is such a sellout kind of concept because it's so easy to blame Nigeria for I just don't understand. It's like that's not a good excuse to lower your expectations or to, you know, change the way you look at the industry altogether. But the service aspect of it, that also has changed because if you look at the education or the training centers, which there aren't that many, that means there is a recycling of staff, going from one restaurant to another. But you see a huge difference in quality of service where the staff actually know what they're doing. And then it made me think, well, if you go abroad, there is, there are staff who are working in these industries who actually go to these restaurants, who get paid enough through, tips and all of that kind of stuff that allow them to go, once, maybe not as often, but once in a blue moon, they get to enjoy a nice restaurant and understand what is expected. Most of the servers, the people who work in the industry, will not be able to afford it.
Yes.
So you're asking them, can I have a creme brulee and expecting them to know exactly what that experience should be like, what that creme brulee should look like, what it should taste like. I mean, obviously the people in the kitchen should know, but that expectation of the people who are serving you is also there. But those people don't have that experience. They don't have the history of going to restaurants and, sitting down and ordering, but they've had to adapt to learn it. So what is that looking like in the future? What is the service industry look like in the future? Are we building an entire human capital where there's now growth, because that's another problem in the industry. There's like a lot of poaching and a lot of like, you know, staff just moving from place to place. So the stability is compromised. What does that look like in the future as more people are getting trained?
You know, I love how every year there are lessons to learn, right? So, for example, I've been in the space for about 13 years. So I've seen waiters earn 20,000, 50,000, 60,000, 70, 80, 90. Now waiters are earning like 200,000,
yeah,
right? That's yeah. So people are like, how much is 200,000? But that's looking at the growth.
Yeah.
So, right. And there are establishments that don't compromise on quality.
Mm-hmm.
There are establishments that go for the best. I've seen waiters, I've engaged some waiters, some front house staff that this is a career choice that they made.
That's another distinction, right?
That's
like career and a job.
This is a career choice that they made. It wasn't circumstantial.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't just something that there was no job and I just stumbled on this. This is something that they understand that there are career opportunities within the hospitality sector. And so by themselves, they've made it their own responsibility to get trained. And so because they've done that, they have negotiation power. So if I go into an interview, they ask you, what's your salary expectation? I can say, this is my salary expectation. I can tell you why this is my salary. Because if you know, in any setup, the reason why employees are employed is to solve problems.
Right?
Even if it's a 20,000 naira employee that is probably their own job is just to pick up trash, right? They're solving problems because if that person isn't there to clean, that place will be dirty, right?
Exactly.
But what we found is over time, many people, circumstantial, right? They've not been able to sort of reconcile passion with this job, because once they leave the job space, they go to face all the beautiful things that are happening in the city, transportation, housing, feeding, all those things. But that's changing. Why is it changing? It's changing because we have more establishment now that are looking for the best hands. So for example, we have a place that is looking for kitchen assistants, but they're not looking for kitchen assistants. They're not looking for just anyone that wants to come on to learn to be kitchen assistants. They're looking for actual trained kitchen assistants, people that understand, because as a kitchen assistant, you actually have responsibilities with regards to maybe portioning, prepping. And if you're prepping as a professional kitchen assistant, for some of the vegetables, there's precision cuts.
Right.
There are measurement cuts and it's not knowledge of just a chef. Even a kitchen assistant should know that. So if I, as an establishment that wants that kind of person, won't I pay?
You pay more, yeah.
Right.
So that's what we're having now. It's not going to be quick. It's not going to be easy, because like they say, the hospitality industry is the largest employer of labor.
Yeah.
And the reason why they say that is because everybody can work in the hospitality space. But it is my own wish, hope, that as these people come into the space, they're able to dream. They're able to see a new world or a new, see possibilities.
Growth. Right. So, this is really interesting. This is really interesting for me because I think the general notion for Nigerians, there's this conditioning that servers are is seen as servitude and not really a skill.
Yeah.
So even for how people perceive them, how people treat them sometimes too. So it's just like, it's just really
interesting. You're right.
It's a mental shift. And I think that only will happen with respect.
I've worked as a waiter before, for example. Yeah. And this is me, a graduate of the university. But the reason why I did that is because, like I said earlier, I believe in process, right? Yeah. And so I wanted to work in every aspect. And so as a business consultant today, you can't deceive me.
You've had the experience, been there.
I remember working as a waiter. A lot of my customers believed that I was trained abroad. Whether it was my charisma, my courage, the way I spoke, the way I served, my product knowledge, I would bring the, and it wasn't like I was big or something. I was still your average looking Nigerian waiter that you could easily abuse if you wanted to, right?
And I think that's such a bad thing to say abuse if you wanted to. Like what, like where, like why do we think that that's okay?
Excellent. It's like crazy, I said that intentionally because that needs to change, right? And one of the ways that I think that, and the reason why I brought that up for, in this conversation is because I made it a point, and I teach this as well. I teach this in training school, and I tell waiters, you are placed in a space where, so for example, in hospitality school, they'll tell you that if they slap you,
turn the other side.
But what
customers always right.
Customers always right. Yeah. So what I've taught now, I always create a scenario. I say, why is it that some customers would see the owner of a business, they don't know the person from anywhere, but they just see them walk into the room and there's just this adjustment, and they speak to them, whether they even change their accent. And they're speaking to them respectfully and so, but when they see you, and that's why I use that, when they see you, they feel like they can abuse you, they can disrespect you, they see you as just menial.
Sir.
Why does that, what happens,
like the conditioning is so
different. So what I teach in school is I tell waiters, I tell service industry people, entry level, to embody the CEO mentality, the courage, the charisma, the outspokenness, the confidence. You're able to speak. You're not being disrespectful, but you're able to speak and command the room.
You can't teach a customer manners.
Exactly.
At the end of the
customers
day.
Don't go to school.
But how you react to them.
Go to school.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chef Gibbs, for helping us understand the industry, where we are and where we're going. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much. I'm very excited about this. And we will look back in so many years and say that we formed what our industry look like in the future.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Feel the fire, feel the flame. You don't choose it.